columns for measured wind speed, temperature, and barometer. She couldn't, of course, make such measurements for the days that had passed, but starting now was better than never. At the far end of the table lay a series of drawings detailing every sandling she could remember seeing. They were on large sheets of black dayside paper, and she had found the oily writing utensils of the continent very easy to draw with. The pictures were waiting for Ntis to return with a hot plate to bind the ink to the paper. Several glass jars contained smaller sandlings, ranging in size from as small as Chris's thumbnail to one as big as her fist. Some of the city boys had gladly caught them for her earlier in the day, especially when she promised them a half lakh coin for each one they brought her. In the direct center of the conglomeration of beakers, charts, books, and instruments sat Chris, her eye pressed to the eyepiece of a microscope. A small oil-burning lamp provided light to be focused and reflected against or above the bottom plate by which she was able to make her discovery.
Interesting choice of decor, if I may say, Duchess. Wasn't this your bedroom?
You know full well that it was, Professor. Just take a look at the slides, Cinder, and tell me what you see.
A professor of linguistics, Cinder was a little wary of peering into the microscope that Chris indicated.
It won't bite.
Cinder peered into the lens and saw what appeared to be a small piece of black carapace.
Tell me, what do you see?
I would say a piece of carapace.
Right.
She switched plates.
Now, look at this.
The same, my lady.
Wrong. That is sand.
Sand? Surely not.
Come here, let me show you.
She gestured him over to three piles of sand. One was white, one black, and the final one a crystalline brownish color.
What do you see?
Well, the first is regular dayside sand. The second is dayside sand that has had water poured on it. And the third is darkside sand.
Right, except for one. The last one is dayside sand too. That is sand that has been eaten by a sandling and excreted.
Sandling feces?
Kind of. The point is, Cinder, that the sand which has passed through a sandling's gullet looks just like darkside sand. Don't you see? There's nothing odd about dayside sand. It has the same silicate structure as what we have on darkside. The difference in color doesn't come from composition, but from something that covers it.
Covers it?
A kind of film. Very thin, but very resilient. Apparently, it grows or accumulates on the surface of the sand. If you pour water on it, it turns black. If a sandling eats the sand, however...
The film gets digested. I see. I had wondered how all these sandlings survived by eating sand.
Cinder stepped aside as Bayon, ever present and watchful, peered into the microscope.
What you were looking at in the microscope was some of this film that I scraped off of black sand. I've got some white scrapings, too. They seem identical except for the color. What we have to do now is figure out what it is.
Lichen grows all over the place back on Darkside. Maybe it's the same sort of thing, only a dayside version.
Preposterous! That would make it a living creature, dear Bayon. Besides, lichen needs water to survive. I hardly think that...
No, Cinder. He might be right, you know? Sandlings don't seem to need water to live. So maybe this lichen doesn't either. We might be looking at the ultimate ancestor of all life on Dayside.
Well, perhaps. A lichen that adheres to silicate surfaces. It would grow very slowly, but with enough time, and with so much sand. It bears study, at least.
And it isn't exactly the same as carapace. Cinder, please, would you dim the lamp for me?
Of course.
Thank you. See, for instance, the lichen doesn't melt when you pour water on it. I already tried. There is, however, something of a reaction. Here, watch this. Bayon, would you please cover the grundlefish?
Yes, my lady.
Bayon complied, placing the covering cloths over the fish globes. In the darkness, Chris picked up a vial of water and moved over next to one of her piles of white sand.
Watch closely.
Chris poured the water on the sand. As she did so, there was a slight flash of light. It was weak, but in the room's blackness, it was easily perceptible.
The lights be on.
He complied, revealing a very interested Cinder.
The sand releases light when water touches it.
Yes, but there's something more. What color was the light you saw?
I don't really know. It passed quickly.
Was it white?
No, Duchess.
Bayon?
It was shifting, radiant like shimmering water or...
Mother of Pearl?
I suppose you could call it that. A kind of soft rainbow scaled toward lighter colors. I've seen its color before.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It is the exact color or combination thereof given off...
by sand that a Sandmaster is controlling.
Exactly. What's more, when a Sandmaster is done using sand, it turns black, just like this.
But what does it mean?
I don't know, but it is encouraging. Don't you see? We can take this sand back to Darkside with us. We can grow the lichen on our own sand and use it like the Sandmasters do.
Cinder was rubbing a bit of the wet sand between his fingers, regarding it with a critical eye.
So the question is, what makes the sand white again?
That I don't know. But I've only been working on it for one day. I intend to find out how this works, Cinder. And when I bring it back to Ellis with me, we'll have a weapon Scathan has never even heard of.
A worthy goal. May the Divine watch over you, my lady.
Oh, thank you.
But I must leave. Akron's been on at me since we awoke about some local stall he's found, which he swears contained some old religious books for purchase. Thinks I'd be interested, so I suppose I should humor him.
With that, Cinder left, and Bayon moved to follow.
Bayon, a moment, if you would.
Bayon paused, turning with a question on his face.
Yes, Duchess, how may I help you?
Bayon, you're from Aeria, correct?
I am.
Have you ever seen Scathan himself?
Occasionally.
What does he look like?
He is an Iarian like myself. Tall, with very dark skin. He is a powerful man, Duchess. Very powerful. And not just because of what he controls. He bears himself like a warrior, with a firm stance and a commanding presence. And of course, his sky color is violet. The color of nobility.
Is it true what they say about him, Bayon? About his abilities?
You mean his magic? Yes, it is quite true.
Chris felt herself grow cold. She had always assumed the tales of Scathan's power were superstitions. But then, hadn't she also assumed that about the Sandmasters?
Are you certain?
Duchess, when I was a young boy, Scathan looked like a man in his mid-twenties. He looked exactly the same way the day I left Iaria. The histories say he is hundreds of years old, and I believe them. I have seen him do things impossible of any normal man.
You always believed we would find the Sand Mages, didn't you?
I did.
But you didn't ever argue with me. Didn't correct me when I pronounced that they were a myth.
You wouldn't have listened to me.
No, that's true. I wouldn't have. Thank you, Bayon.
The warrior nodded, turning to leave the room.
I'll leave you to your exploration of the Sand Mage's tricks, Duchess.
Thank you.
Chris watched him go with a slight frown.
Now, why do I feel like you're not telling me everything, Bayon? What else do you keep hidden because you assume I wouldn't believe you?
Suddenly, Akron's concerns from before resurfaced. She couldn't suspect Bayon of wishing her harm. He had proven his loyalty too much for that. She didn't know what she sensed. Somehow she knew Bayon was hiding something. It came from the way he held himself, the way he answered questions. The odd thing was, most of her suspicions came because of his teachings. If he hadn't trained her to be more observant...
What are you hiding, Bayon?
It was later. Much later. Chris hurried to get ready. She had spent too much time on her studies, inspecting the different sandlings her young helpers had recovered, and now she was late. Kenton had said he would arrive at ninth hour, which meant she barely had 30 dark side minutes to get ready. She mulled over her choices, considering the different items hanging in her closet. Idan was an absolute marvel. He had managed to press all of her dark side dresses, removing the horrible wrinkles caused by 4 months of travel.
Oh, the blue or the red? Blue? Red?
The real question was, dare she wear any of them? They were modest by dark side standards, but she had yet to see a woman on Dayside whose robes weren't bulky and form-hiding. Of course, she had her own robes. Perhaps she should wear one of them instead. The more she considered it, however, the more she leaned toward one of the dark side dresses.
As if I should care about reputation around here. Be daring!
Nodding to herself decisively, she pulled out her most flamboyant, bold outfit.
Yes, the red.
It was a sleek, form-fitting, bright red dress, completely different from everything she had seen on Bayside. Not only was the neckline dangerously low, but it also had a slit up one side. She blushed when she thought of what the Dayside men would think, but at the same time, she found herself smiling wickedly. The outfit wasn't too risque by Elysian standards, and she was a Duchess of Elys. Why should she pretend to be otherwise? She put the dress on, then moved over to the mirror to do something with her hair. Chris went to work, silently cursing the fact that she didn't have a lady servant to help her. Eventually, she chose a hairstyle that looked more difficult to produce than it actually was, with half of her hair braided around the top of her head, the other half spilling out like a dark waterfall over her left shoulder.
It's too bad I can't use my sky color here.
Instead, she chose a few pieces of jewelry. She didn't normally wear much, but this was a special occasion. A matching gold necklace and bracelet set with small rubies eventually won. It was part of what she had brought to sell if necessary. But with what gemstones were worth on this side of the world, she probably wouldn't have to. As she worked, she noticed something hanging forgotten in her closet.
Hello! I'd almost forgotten you were there.
The current fashion in Darkside was to wear matching shawl waist ribbon combinations with dresses. The waist ribbons looked kind of like translucent versions of Sandmaster sashes, and she did have a golden one. With a smile, Chris tied on the golden waist ribbon and threw the shawl over her bare shoulders. She wouldn't need it in this heat, but the gold did make a nice compliment to the red dress.
He has arrived, my lady.
Thank you, Idan.
Chris gave her makeup a final look over before leaving her room. She walked down the hallway, spotting Kenton where he waited below with his Kirstian guard. Chris smiled with satisfaction as he saw her. The dress had the desired effect. Kenton stared at her, his eyes opening slightly wider. His gaze followed her all the way down the staircase.
I trust you're not going to get me killed today?
No. They can only attack me every other day, or at least that is what Ace claims.
Chris nodded, regarding the man who would be her escort for the evening, and noticing for the first time that she wasn't the only one who had paid special attention to attire this day.
No, you're not wearing robes?
No, I never really liked them. I decided that if I'm Lord Marstral, then I should at least be able to choose what I wear.
Kenton's new outfit was loose-fitting enough that it could have been robes, which was why Chris hadn't noticed it at first. He wore a pair of white trousers, cut after dark side fashion, but broader through the legs. The pants ran all the way down to his cloth-wrapped shoes, pulling in at the ankle and then tucking underneath upon itself, probably to keep the sand out. His shirt was a little bit tighter, but still loose by dark side standards. Its wide sleeves went all the way to his wrists, where they too tucked in upon themselves. Over it all was a long white cloak, and of course, he wore the golden sash around his waist.
Well, what do you think?
I've never seen anything like it.
You're not alone. I went into town and had it made today. I'll tell you, the poor Curtian seamstress must have thought I was daft. Of course, I'm a sandmaster, so she would have thought that no matter what I did.
He certainly cut a more imposing figure in the outfit. It was more sleek than the average robes and would stand out.
Now, let's go. The invitation said the ball was in my honor, whatever that means. I should probably try to avoid being too late.
As the party of four, including Bayon and Ace, left the house, Chris paused.
Wait, where's Entis?
She was running errands, Duchess. I don't believe she has returned.
Oh, I told her to be here.
Don't worry, I'll translate for you. Now come on, we're going to be late.
It was only a slight untruth. He had noticed that Chris and the other Darksiders paid a lot more attention to time than most people on Dayside. When the Lord Admiral's invitation said 10th hour, it really meant sometime around 10th hour. Chris, however, preferred exactness, and so his comment had the desired effect.
Well, Lord Master, are you coming or not?
Of course. I was just admiring your sash.
This? I thought we should match. Put on a united front.
Ah, that makes sense.
So, tell me, Kentan, what kind of man is the Lord Admiral? Is he a military figure, I assume?
Oh, no. The term admiral is probably a poor translation in your language. The helm, profession of sailors, is more mercantile than anything else. Of course, a lot of Lysand is like that. Assuming Lord Delius invites the customary people to his party, you'll meet quite a few generals who have never seen a day of battle. High ranks in most of the professions, especially the helm, tower, and the field, come from doing well financially.
But if they are all merchants, who is the Lord Merchant?
Lord Money Changer would probably be a better title. The Guild is a profession for money changers and lenders. They fund most of the other professions' undertakings, but they rarely do any trading themselves. Except maybe dealing in real estate.
I see.
Chris slipped on her dark spectacles as they exited the shady environs of Darksider Town. As Kenton began to walk in the direction of the Kelsey district, Chris just stood there, as if expecting something.
Wait, we're walking there?
Of course. Why not?
I just thought... nothing.
She began to move forward, and the back of her foot sunk into the first patch of sand she crossed, nearly making her trip.
Duchess, are you all right?
You're wearing those shoes again, aren't you?
They go with the dress.
Chris tried to walk again.
Oh!
Only to nearly twist her ankle as she hit a crack in the stone.
Here, I'll help you. Why would anyone wear something that silly?
People were stopping around them, men openly gawking at Chris's attire, others noticing Kenton and growing white-faced as they recognized the Lord Mastral.
All right, maybe you have a point, Duchess. Wait here.
Kenton ordered his sand to life and jumped into the air.
What?
He soared up, landing himself on the top of a nearby building and scanning the streets below. Many Kelsian preferred to use carriages rather than walking. Kenton, like most Lysanders, considered them a waste of time. Khazar was busy enough that walking was usually faster. Now, however, he was beginning to realize why such things might be necessary.
Let's see... where... Aha!
He spotted a carriage a few streets away, and its open-topped back was empty, so Kenton decided to give it a try. He dropped himself three stories to land inside the back of the moving carriage, startling the poor driver.
My lord!
You wouldn't happen to be free for hire, would you?
Well, yes, my lord. Where should I take you?
Excellent. First, we need to pick up my friends. How much do you charge for a day?
Charge, my lord? But you're the Lord Mastral.
I am, but I'd still rather pay, if that's all right with you.
Certainly, my lord. 3 lakh, then.
The driver took the money, acting as if it were one of the strangest things he had seen.
There. 3 lakh.
Thank you, Lord Mastral.
At first, Chris thought the approaching object was one massive sandling. As it approached, however, she realized it was just one of the carriages. She had seen them occasionally in town. They were fashioned completely from carapace plates, uniformly black except for the rims of the wheels, which were made of steel. 2 very large tonks pulled the contraption, more like a cart than a carriage, and Kenton lounged in the back.
Your carriage, my lady.
Chris raised an eyebrow as the cart pulled to a stop in front of her. She waited expectantly, but Kenton just sat in the back.
Well?
It is customary to help a lady into a carriage.
All right, I can do that.
No, wait!
Kenton's sand grabbed her under the arms and lifted her into the air.
Put me down! This is most undignified!
Kenton smoothly placed her on the seat next to him.
I can find my own way up, Kenton.
Ace?
Do not touch me with your unholy arts, Rikensha.
Bayon and Ace climbed into the front pair of seats.
You're not funny, you know.
Oh, I think Bayon found it amusing. Right, Bayon?
Bayon remained non-committal as the vehicle made its way through the city. They headed west, and the street crowds thinned drastically as they approached the richer section of town. By the time they had passed over the wide bridge that separated the larger island from the small one, there was almost no one to be seen. Their carriage approached an enormous mansion with a columned stone front. Several carriages, like the one they rode in, sat out front of the building, and Chris could see forms climbing out of them.
Other than your change of clothes, what can one expect from the Lord Admiral's party?
Honestly, I don't know. I've never been to one of these before. I would expect there to be a lot of Kelton, most of them trying to work some sort of deal with the others.
Business? At a party?
Parties are only excuses. Lysandan people, like Kurtzians, like to make business contracts in an informal setting.
No dancing, then?
Dancing? Why? Most of the people here will already be married.
A servant hurried to greet Kenton, bowing formally.
My lord, the Lord Admiral awaits you in the sand gardens behind the house.
Thank you.
They entered the gardens to the Lord Admiral's grand mansion, following the path that led around the building's exterior. Kenton felt shaky. He hadn't been lying when he told Chris he didn't know what to expect. He had never been to this sort of event before. His tension mounted as they rounded Delius's mansion and walked toward a large series of tents to the building's rear. Other couples were being led along as well, most of them richly dressed in colorful robes and jewelry. Of course, none of the colors could match the deep redness of Chris's dress. Whatever dyes they had on Darkside, they were much more vibrant than those of Dayside.
What will they expect of me?
Confrontation he could handle, but mingling? For some reason, he found the concept daunting.
Announcing Lord Mastral of the Diem and the Duchess Chrysella of Elis.
The official looked at the two bodyguards who accompanied Kenton and shook his head as if embarrassed.
Your men will need to wait in the servants' tent, my lord.
Sure.
Kenton and Chris strode ahead.
Oh, what did he say? I'm lost without Intis. I wish I knew where she'd run off to.
He said that Bayon and my shadow need to wait outside.
Oh, Bayon won't like that.
While Kenton and Chris went on ahead into the pavilion, Ace showed the doorman an invitation.
The servant's tent is...
No. I shall be attending instead of the Lady Judge Helis, who regrets that she is unable to attend.
I profusely apologize, my lady. I had not realized.
Apology accepted.
As she entered the tent, Ace noticed a figure hurrying to leave. The figure was shambolic, his face a mess of scar tissue, which he was swiftly hiding with a tug of his hood. Nilto. He had been watching the newcomers entering the pavilion. Then he had seen her. He must have done. Ace watched as Nilto departed.
Run, Shazam. While you still have somewhere left to go.
The inside of the large pavilion was well lit by openings in the ceiling. It was filled with people, most of whom wore the wheel-shaped symbol of the helm sewn into their robes over the left shoulder. It made sense that the helm would be well represented, but there were Kelzine from the field, the tower, and the guild as well.
Kenton, stop it!
Stop what?
Stop being so tense!
I'm not tense.
Oh, that's convincing. They'll sense if you're intimidated. These people might not be called noblemen after the dark side sense, but they're basically the same thing. To them, a person's sense of superiority determines how much respect they deserve. Be confident.
If you say so.
I do. If everything else fails, Just start throwing around some of that sand of yours. It's bound to intimidate the others.
That and probably get me excluded from every other guest list in town.
Then you won't have to worry about parties anymore, will you? Win-win.
I suppose there is that.
As the couple entered the tent, everyone took notice, bringing everything to a dramatic pause. Kenton's eyes flickered toward Chris, who stood regarding the expression with confident, even defiant eyes. She met gazes square on, smiling prettily all the way as the two began to walk into the room. Kenton looked forward again, trying to mimic her stance. In a way, he felt like he was at some sort of trial, a defendant being judged not on his testimony but on his appearance. As soon as the thought occurred to him, Kenton felt his own confidence begin to grow. He probably wouldn't do much arguing this night, but it would be a struggle nonetheless. A struggle to prove himself, that he could do.
Lord Mastral, over here! I feared you wouldn't come.
Chris, this is Delius, the Lord Admiral. It's his party. He invited us.
The Lord Admiral stood near the back of the tent, speaking with a group of Kelsian with suffering looks on their faces. Looks that said they wished to the sands that they could be somewhere else, but feared to leave lest one of their competitors gain an unnoticed upper hand. Delius was his usual wine-sodden self, dressed in bright plum robes that nearly hid the wine stains. He made an exaggerated gesture toward Kenton, his motions breaking the tense silence and prompting the Kelsian back into their conversations. Delius didn't give them much time to speculate, however.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Kenton, where did you... Ah, there you are. What an interesting choice of clothing. Much more fashionable than those robes of yours.
He stood for a moment, waiting for his youthful wine steward to top up his cup.
Excellent. Now then, I have an announcement to make, everyone. Everyone! I have called this gathering specific, for a special purpose, or rather, a specific person. I wish to pronounce my formal support of the Lord Mastral in the upcoming vote.
Delius raised his glass, and his party guests did likewise, albeit rather uncertainly.
Let the helm be the first to extend our hand to our Sandmaster brethren in their time of need.
And with that, the Lord Admiral promptly passed out, dropping his cup to the floor as he collapsed to the ground.
That is the Lord Admiral?
Delius, the only man in Lysand who could collapse drunk before the party even begins.
My lord! My lord! Quickly, bring water!
Delius always votes in opposition to the rest of the council, especially the Lord Merchant. Just a few days ago, he told me he would follow that exact pattern, voting for me only if Lord Vey voted against.
Kenton's eyes were speculative as he watched several servants tow Lord Delius over to the side of the tent and prop him up on some cushions. A few moments later, they succeeded in waking the man back up.
My lord, please wake up. You're missing your party.
Who's that? A party? Whose party?
Wonder what made him change his mind.
What if it was, I get the impression the Kelsian don't like it.
Big surprise.
Come on, we should mingle.
We should?
It's what one does at these things, Kenton. Don't you know anything?
Chris smiled, reaching for Kenton's hand.
Hey, are you... You're not actually enjoying yourself, are you?
Do you know? For the first time in a long while, I think I really am.
The arrival of the food signaled that the party was almost at its end. The servants began to slide in long tables full of breads, dips, and zidon. Now, new business partners would gather a plate and a guidot full of wine and make their way to a more secluded place where they could celebrate their alliance and plot the downfall of their enemies.
I had assumed there wouldn't be food.
Why would you assume that?
Well, I thought the party was almost over.
It is. That's why they are bringing in the food.
Oh.
I guess they do things differently on Darkseid.
Of course.
The party had gone better than Kenton had expected. The Kelzine didn't like him. That much he had predicted. However, despite their distaste, they had been civil and willing to talk to him. Some had even seemed eager for some reason. Little of what they discussed had been important, but Kenton had suffered it, mostly because of Chris's constant encouragement. And occasionally he had been able to work something of substance into the conversation, implying that if the DM were to continue, the Sandmasters would bring prosperity to all of Losand. He wasn't certain if his talking would do any good. The Kelzine were not Taisha. They had no vote on the council, or any direct influence on the vote. However, they did hold a great deal of power in Losand. If perhaps his words had swayed any of them, then there was a chance their support would help influence the Taisha. Regardless, one thing was certain. They looked at the Lord Mastral in a completely new way. They were used to old, mysterious men holed up in the DM, rarely making appearances in town. Instead, they now had Kenton, a boy not even 2 decades old with a vigorous temperament, a flair for originality, and a half-naked dark side woman on his arm. Kenton smiled to himself. This would not be a party they soon forgot.
Oh, Zaidon, is that all you people eat?
There's bread too, just behind the...
I see it. Oh, one of these days, I'm going to have to introduce you to true cuisine.
Here, just taste this.
He handed her a piece of Zaidan. It was a floppy piece of meat that felt soft to the touch and smelled of the pungent ashewin that coated it. Zaidan was made from the pus of sandlings. You took the sandling pus, churned it in a tub for a few hours, then let it dry in the sun. It was a staple food on Dayside, eaten with every meal. Some forms of Zaidan were so tasteless that the Daysiders added spice to it while it was drying. Chris had previously sworn off it when she had been traveling the desert with Kenton, where it was the only ration they had in their saddlebags. She thought it was disgusting.
Must I?
Well, it would be a grave offense to our host not to do so, but it's your choice.
She was not sure if Kenton was joking. She suspected that he was. She took a moment to see if she could find the Lord Admiral, but he didn't appear to be mingling with the Kelzine. Presumably, he was somewhere sleeping off his earlier collapse or working up to his next one. She rolled her eyes, but let Kenton put the piece of dried Zaidan into her mouth.
This is actually good.
Of course. You didn't think it all tasted like travel rations, did you?
Chris didn't answer as Kenton handed her a plate, then moved to fill them a dipping bowl, a carapace dish with 5 different sections for different sauces. By the time he was done, Kenton's plate was piled so high it was worthy of his friend Eric.
So? Now what?
Now we find a place to eat.
They exited the pavilion, making their way through the ornate gardens with the sandling pens and their luxurious fountains, both signs of the extravagant wealth the Lord Admiral could call upon.
Ah, I think you're a hit with the other guests.
Not me. You. The wealthy Kelzin just endure me politely.
Well, at least they're polite about it.
Hopefully I've helped them see how the DM could bring prosperity to Losand. In my experience, nobles do like prosperity.
That's been my experience, too.
They found a quiet area to sit beside a fountain whose radiating coolness Chris greatly appreciated.
Did I say earlier, I like your belt? Very apt.
You did. I thought it might help promote your cause to bring sand mastery to the masses. Speaking of which, how does sand mastery work? Can you show me?
I can't. A master craftsman shares his art with all who see it, but he doesn't necessarily reveal the secrets of its creation. Besides, you're a Darksider. Darksiders can't manipulate sand.
You can.
I'm only half Darksider. Chris, being a Sandmaster is a lifelong commitment, to the exclusion of everything else. Would you really make that commitment when you're only going to fail?
You don't know that. I could.
There are rules for joining the DM. Rules for being there and rules for conduct.
Traditions, you mean. Those can be changed now that you're Lord Mastral, Kenton.
Kenton, my boy!
The Lord Admiral approached the couple with a leisurely gait.
Surely you've not been relegated to eating by yourself?
Only by choice, Lord Admiral. Won't you join us?
Kenton switched to the dynastic tongue to explain to Chris, hoping that the Lord Admiral's intrusion would silence her infernal questions.
The Lord Admiral will be eating with us, Chris.
Oh, that's sobering.
I fear I should start with an apology. I specifically asked you to bring this beauty of a Darksider to meet me, then find myself with no opportunity to introduce myself.
He says you're a Darkside beauty, and he apologizes for failing to introduce himself sooner.
As Kenton related the words, Delius kneeled with some evident exertion before Chris and kissed her hand.
Tell him that the apology should be mine. I should have made myself known to my host.
She says the fault is hers, and she should have introduced herself.
I hope you enjoyed the party.
He hopes you've enjoyed the party.
It was a fine gathering, your lordship.
It was a fine party, your lordship.
By Dayside standards or Darkside standards, I've often heard that Daysiders are more refined than those of us over here.
He wants to know if it meets up to Darkside standards.
It was fine by my standards, your lordship, which is all that matters to me.
The Duchess says that it was fine by her standards, Lord Admiral, which is all that matters.
Good answer. And you, Lord Mastral?
It was agreeable. I just wish the lords of your profession were more receptive to me. I suppose centuries of Sandmaster arrogance work against me.
True. Although it could be the Akkar. He plans to slow trade down between the Curtsian Nation and Lassand if he wins the choosing in a few weeks. It is said, however, that the Akkar would forgo this embargo if Lassand were to renounce its unholy past.
Renounce the Sandmasters, you mean?
Quite so. The rumors are that the Akkar would even be willing to reward Lassand for getting rid of the Sandmasters by revoking the Curtsian taboo against goods that have been traded over water.
Sands. No wonder the Keltzen hate me. It's a wonder they haven't tried to assassinate me themselves. With so much riding on my defeat, I'm tempted to hate myself.
No, don't do that. It would be far too trendy.
The Keltzen must not have thought much of your declaration of support.
No, I don't imagine they did.
Why did you do it, then?
Because. Tell me, Lord Mastral, how much do you know about the helm and its method of choosing its leader?
Not much. When one studies the Taisha, it was customary to leave out the Lord Admiral.
It's probably best that way. And now I fear I must leave you. I must go mingle. I have many other people to bother before I'll be satisfied that this party was worth the time. Please eat as much as you want. Oh, and do try to, waste some wine for me.
Delius walked away with a jaunty wave and a rolling swagger that owed much to his prodigious intake of wine. Once he was out of earshot, Kenton quickly filled Chris in on their exchange.
Kenton, that man is more than just a drunken slob, but at least he has the potential to be more.
I know. He used the word waste when he talked about the wine. It seemed out of place. I think he was trying to tell me something.
So, we were talking about my learning sand mastery.
Nice try, Duchess.
What are you so afraid of? What do you think I'd do?
Not listening, not going to tell you.
Kenton rose, the meal consumed, and helped her to her feet. Watching from close by, and ever vigilant, Ace saw them leaving and moved to join them, following behind with her ever-inscrutable expression. After collecting Bayon from the servants' tent, they simply made their way back to the front of the building. Apparently, the arrival of the meal was an understood dismissal by the Lord Admiral, and they weren't required to bid him farewell. As they were leaving, however, Chris saw a familiar form, a hunched figure, speaking animatedly with a few seated Kelzine.
Is that Milto?
You know him?
We have met. Why wasn't he at the party?
Maybe he arrived late.
Did your companion say Milto? I saw him earlier. He slipped out just after we arrived.
probably hates Sandmasters. It's a common sentiment among the people he represents. But you said you'd met him before, Chris. What's the protocol? Should we greet him?
No. Let's just go.
The carriage waited where Kenton had left it, and the four climbed in for their return trip. As they did so, the driver turned to Kenton, an anxious expression on his face.
Not to complain, Lord Mastrel, but the Diem's rather out of my way to give you a ride for just 3 lakh.
I'm implementing a new system. I'll be paying for this journey as well.
As well? Sandlord be praised!
Kenton was lost in thought as the carriage made its way from the Lord Admiral's, across the Kelthrain Bridge, and away from the rich Kelsey district, toward the crowded buildings that characterized the rest of Khazar. The fact that Chris was pushing him so hard for information about sand mastery, while at the same time showing him genuine support with regard to his own predicament, had left him confused. He didn't know if she was an ally or an irritation, and he suspected that she might be a little of both. That also nagged at him. The DM, with its secrecy and its self-importance, was the very thing he was fighting against. In fact, it was the thing he had been fighting against for most of his life, he realized now. The inward-looking clique that the Mastrel subscribed to, the very attitude that had caused them to distance themselves from the people of Lossand, and in turn had brought the DM to its current position, distrusted and hated by so many.
There was a time when sand mastery was used to build.
Kenton said the words out of nowhere. Chris had been engaged in conversation with Bayon at that moment, both of them expressing their distaste for the spice-heavy local cuisine. They stopped, both of them staring at Kenton.
Sorry?
Sand mastery. There was a time when it had been used to build, constructing buildings, places where people could live and work. I don't know when we became so remote, or why.
You sound regretful, Daysider.
Yes. No, it was gradual, I think, and it happened long before I was part of the DM. Before I was born, even. But the records clearly show that we used to give, rather than just take.
He looked at Ace, aware that she could not understand the dynastic tongue. She loathed him, and her fixed expression barely masked that contempt. Traveling through the city like this, where the buildings clamored together one atop the other, and where not a building went by that didn't show some sign of disrepair, Kenton realized why she could hate his guild so, religious edict or not.
Ace, I'm...
Look out, it's coming down!
The noise came from down the street. It rocked the carriage with an impact that shook the ground.
What is it? What is happening over there?
Kenton stood up in his seat, saw the dust cloud racing up the street. Bayon was already half-crouched, his hand on the butt of one of his pistols. However, the sounds didn't sound like a battle. Frowning, Kenton stood, reaching into his sand pouch.
Wait here.
He raced down the street, following the source of the billowing dust. They had been nearing the more busy section of the city. People stood looking toward the dust with confusion on their faces.
Did you see what happened? Does anyone know?
Excuse me. Watch out!
Kenton pushed them, making his way down a side street until he approached the source of the disturbance. A wreck of a building stood before him. Workers stood anxiously around the collapsed structure, many of their faces bruised and cut, a coating of dust on their clothes. From what Kenton could tell, the building had fallen as they tried to add the second story. One of the walls, a massive construction of blocks and mortar, had fallen inward. Kenton drew the attention of a man whose clothes were covered in dust.
What is going on here?
The man, a foreman of some sort, noticed him for the first time. He pulled off his brimmed worker's hat and held it before him nervously.
I'm sorry, my lord. We did not mean to disturb you.
Nonsense. What happened?
Nothing to concern yourself with, my lord.
The man looked horrified to see a sand mastrel here, standing right next to him. Kenton ignored him, studying the other workers. Most of them stood facing him, their eyes cast down at the ground. A couple of them weren't looking at him, however. They continued to work, their faces desperate as they pushed against a steel rod, using it to vainly try and lift part of the collapsed wall. Kenton could hear voices calling from below the wreck in what must have been a basement chamber.
No! Don't go anyway!
The stone wall was barely holding together, its mortar cracking even as the workers continued their futile effort to lift it. The enormous blocks were beginning to break free from one another.
There are men down there?
Please, my lord, don't punish them. It wasn't their fault. It was mine. We didn't mean to bother you.
The builder's afraid of me. They all are.
Kenton pushed the foreman aside and reached for his sand. The foreman collapsed to his knees in fear.
Oh, Sands! Oh, Sands!
I shouldn't do this. Sandmasters rarely use their powers to help others outside the Diem. Because we've been fools.
The three workers at the bar, which was now bent horribly, cringed in fright as three glowing sand ribbons whipped toward them.
Please, don't hurt us!
An instant later, they looked up with surprise as the sand didn't attack them, but instead moved in between the fallen wall and the lip of rocky ground. Kenton held his hands before him, his fist clenched. His eyes closed, and then began to push. A Sandmaster's ability to lift depended on the height he wanted to obtain. Ribbons could only handle so much stress, and they buckled if one didn't have enough sand to create a proper foundation. Even the weaker Sandmasters, the ones who could only control a single ribbon, could usually lift themselves a few inches into the air. It was height that required strength. But this day, Kenton didn't need height.
My ribbons can only take so much weight. But today, it has to be enough.
He strained his power, pushing against the stone wall, the muscles in his body growing tense, as if he were working with his entire body and not just his sand. And then, incredibly, the wall began to rise. He could only lift it a few feet, but it was enough. He cracked his eyes, holding the massive weight with difficulty. As three grungy workers scrambled from the dark basement room.
Move, Kyan! Move!
Sandlord be blessed. Sandlord be blessed.
Helping hands pulled them to freedom. A second later, Kenton's strength ran out. The wall crashed back to the ground, its mortar shattering immediately, dropping a half dozen massive blocks into the basement. Kenton felt drained. He nearly collapsed from fatigue as he reached out to a nearby wall for support.
I'm dehydrated. I can feel myself drying out inside.
Kenton slumped back against the wall, pulling out his Dido.
I extended myself, dangerously so, for people who fear me.
Finally, he opened his eyes, looking at the amazed foreman who was still kneeling on the ground before him.
My lord, thank you.
What is your name, man?
Trell, sir.
All right, Trell. Next time you have a problem like this, send for a Sandmaster immediately. Understand?
Yes, my lord.
Good.
Kenton rose unsteadily, turning back toward the street. Chris stood in front of him, her strange shoes held in her hands, the massive Bayon behind her.
I thought I told you to stay put.
And why would I listen to you?
Because it might have been a trap of some sort, meant to kill me.
They can't attack you today. You told me that, remember?
Well, that's the theory.
Ace was regarding the devastation with a quiet expression.
That was very noble of you.
It's what we should have been doing all along.
It's too bad the rest of the world can't benefit from such abilities.
Such as Darkseid, I suppose? Chris, I'm starting to appreciate you're as good at arguing for your own way as I am. Not that I'm falling for it.
All right, boys, let's start picking up this rubble.
Trell!
Lord Mastrel?
Don't you think your men deserve the rest of the day off?
But Kelsey Car...
Send your men home. If your boss... The good Kelsey has a problem. Tell him he can bring it up with the Lord Mastrel.
Yes, my lord? Well, you all heard the Lord Mastrel. Shift's over. Go home. Spend some time with your families. We'll fix this up tomorrow.
Kenton smiled as he walked away, making his way back to the carriage. Shortly after Chris returned to her lodging rooms, Bayon joined her in her bedroom-turned-makeshift library, where she was back experimenting on the local materials.
So it's impossible, Duchess?
It's a fact, Bayon.
Bayon sat on her bed, frowning slightly, his pistols on his lap. He was methodically cleaning the barrels and oiling the mechanisms.
It does explain where Intise disappeared all day. I'm surprised that she even managed to find the sulfur, but you also need saltpeter to make gunpowder. I could probably make some if we had the time, but I intend to head back to Darkseid as soon as I know the secret of Sand Mastery. Although right now, Kindan's being needlessly obstructive, and the wretched language barrier means I can't easily talk with the other Sand Masters. Tell me, how many charges do you have left for your pistols?
6. Do you want me to shoot Kenton until he relents?
No, though I'm afraid you'll have to get very good with the Zinkal if you intend on shooting anything at all, long term.
Chris turned back to the small jar of clear liquid she had set up on the table, purchased more out of curiosity than for practical use.
Now, let's see.
She reached over to drop a piece of carapace into the jar. The carapace bubbled for a moment, like hydrogen peroxide poured on a wound, then fell still. She reached her forceps in, pulling out the carapace piece, then dropped it into a jar of water. It sank to the bottom, but did not dissolve.
Was that carapace?
Yes. It creates some sort of patina. The outer layer of carapace reacts with the liquid, transforming it into something that is insoluble in water.
A useful process.
He turned back to the busy work of reassembling his pistol. Chris turned to watch him work, his fingers moving with familiarity. The pistols were beautiful constructions, their barrels clean and polished, their handles inlaid with silver plates that were intricately carved. Carved in the shape of the Elysian royal seal. And, of course, the two-barrel design was usually reserved for officers and the rich, a sort of prestige symbol. Chris frowned.
Bayon, where did you get your pistols?
I acquired them.
Bayon, those are Elysian officers' pistols. Where did you get them?
I don't think you want to know.
They are officers' pistols. Like Captain Daryl and his lieutenant would have carried. The two men who were killed that night when you were off scouting. Bayon, did you kill Captain Daryl?
Yes.
Were you sent to Ellis by the dynasty?
Yes.
Chris didn't know what to do. It was impossible. Bayon was too good, too loyal to be a spy. However, a part of her warned that a spy would be no good unless he were convincing, capable of gaining the trust of those he was to infiltrate, those he was to kill.
Oh, shut up! They sent you to stop me if I found the Sandmasters, didn't they?
Bayon didn't respond. Instead, she looked up to see Akron and Cinder standing in the open doorway, their eyes wide with shock. Cinder's hand lay open, a jar of white powder having dropped free from its grasp. They had found some saltpeter after all.
Duchess?
Bayon stood and bowed before Chris.
That's it then. Good day, Duchess.
With that, he pushed his way through the pair of stunned professors and out the door. Chris watched in amazement, not certain how to react.
Is he...
leaving? Yes.
Did I hear correctly? That
he could have killed me. All this time he waited. But why would he do that? Why would he wait?
Bayon was always an inscrutable fellow. So, what now, Duchess?
I need to go talk to Kenton.
May I suggest you get some sleep first, my lady? You've had quite a shock after a long day, too.
Cinder's right. No need to be hasty.
Chris nodded her agreement. It was too late to be booking passage to the DM now anyway. But her mind was made up. Come tomorrow, she would go back to speak with Kenton. Kenton was on edge. He had returned to the DM safely enough, tried to sleep, but a part of him kept jumping at shadows, sure that an assassin was lurking there, just waiting to strike. When Eric approached him without warning from the balcony, placing his arm around Kenton's shoulders, Kenton brought his sand to life and almost threw him before he stopped himself.
Tans, a bit jumpy today, aren't you? When assassins want you dead, Eric, you tend to be a little jumpy.
Why would they bother? You're just going to kill yourself in 6 days, remember? Death by dryal?
Yes, well, I have to last those 6 days. Besides, as I constantly have to remind you, there's a chance I'll survive the fight with dryal.
Keep telling yourself that.
Thank you for the outpouring of optimism. Anyway, what's on your mind?
I've just heard. You caused quite the commotion in town yesterday.
Hard to miss, Eric. The whole DM's been talking about it ever since I got back.
Yes, they're saying you're going into the construction business. You should probably say something official, you know.
I don't know.
You have 6 days to leave your mark in the sand, or...
or...
be blown away by the Kerala winds.
Maybe you're right.
It has been known.
I'll ask Dirin to gather everyone.
On Kenton's instruction, Dirin called together all of the remaining Sandmasters, from the few remaining Undermastrels in their yellow sashes, right down to the white-sashed Acolytes, whose studies into Sand Mastery had barely begun when the DM suffered its darkest day with the death of Lord Praxton.
Here we go.
Dryal, of course, was front and center, sneering as he watched Kenton walk to the head of the group with Eric at his side before turning to address them.
People, by now you've doubtless all heard about what I did in town yesterday.
They say you helped some masons.
Are we to work with them, Lord Mastral, if the DM... well, if there's a change in our circumstances, I mean?
All right, please, just settle down.
It's a valid question, Lord Mastral.
That was Dryal, ever ready to bring Kenton down, even with their duel upcoming. Kenton fixed him with a stare as he spoke.
Times are changing for us here at the DM, and we need to change with them or run the risk of being made irrelevant. We're no longer going to hide behind our secretive world of rules and traditions. The Sandmasters are going out there to serve the people.
The gates to the DM crashed open, and a figure strode into the courtyard, momentarily just a silhouette with the sunlight behind her. Kenton tensed, certain that it was another assassin, and beside him, Ace was bringing up her arm, Zinkal primed.
It's all right, buddy. It's...
Lord Master, I've decided.
Chris?
I'm ready to become a Sand Master.
White Sand, Volume 2, by Brandon Sanderson, has been a graphic audio production. Copyright 2018 by Brandon Sanderson. Recorded with the permission of the author and Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2019, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with Alexander Strain as Kenton, Dawn Ursula as Chris, Bradley Smith as Eric, Yasmin Twazan as Ace, Jason B. McIntosh as Bayon, Scott McCormick as Delius, Frank Britton as Cinder, Kenyatta Rogers as Akron, Mort Shelby as Regent. Also with Rose Elizabeth Supan, Dwen Washington, Eric Messner, Joe Mallon, Jonathan Church, Paul Reisman, Steve Wanall, Ken Jackson, Alejandro Ruiz, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Jonathan Foyer, Colleen Delaney, Nick DePinto, Tim Carlin, Matthew Bassett, Andy Brownstein, Nana Ingvarsson, Holly Vagley, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joy Jones, Alyssa Wilmoth, and Chris Davenport as Hoyd. The graphic novel direct-to-graphic audio adaptation by Rick Hoskin, directed by Scott McCormick, produced by Richard Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Justin Wirtz. Kenton and the Duchess Chrysala will return in White Sand Volume 3. Underpowered and overwhelmed, Kenton must now hold the Sandmasters together as forces political and personal conspire against them. In one final push, with the assistance of his friends Chris and Eric, Kenton must tap into the most dangerous depths of his own abilities to combat the enemies within his own guild and discover the truth behind the ambush that killed his father and nearly destroyed the Sandmasters for good. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in Graphic Audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. For those of you who are new to Graphic Audio, check out our Graphic Audio Streams subscription service, where you can choose from four different genres. Each plan features two Graphic Audio titles per month to listen to through our Graphic Audio Access app. At the beginning of every month, the previous featured titles will be automatically removed and replaced by the new featured titles. It's an economical way to check out and sample titles from our various series in Graphic Audio, starting at only $4.99 per month. And be sure to listen to our newly reformatted Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can get GASP in the free Graphic Audio Access app or subscribe to GASP through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.